Chapter 27, God Gives His Law on Mount Sinai. Soon after the encampment at Sinai, Moses was called up into the mountain to meet with God. Israel was now to be taken into a close and peculiar relation to the Most High, to be incorporated as a church and a nation under the government of God. Ye have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, and how I bare you on eagle's wings, and brought you unto myself. Now therefore, if ye will obey my voice indeed, and keep my covenant, then ye shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine, and ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests, and an holy nation. Moses returned to the camp, and to the elders of Israel he repeated the divine message. Their answer was, "All that the Lord hath spoken we will do." Thus they entered into a solemn covenant with God, pledging themselves to accept Him as their ruler, by which they became, in a special sense, the subjects of His authority. God purposed to make the occasion of speaking His law a scene of awful grandeur. Everything connected with the service of God must be regarded with the greatest reverence. The Lord said to Moses, "Go unto the people, and sanctify them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their clothes, for the third day the Lord will come down in the sight of all the people upon Mount Sinai." All were to occupy the time in solemn preparation to appear before God. Their person and their clothing must be freed from impurity. They were to devote themselves to humiliation, fasting, and prayer that their hearts might be cleansed from iniquity. On the morning of the third day, Sinai's summit was covered with a thick cloud, black and dense, sweeping downward until the entire mountain was wrapped in darkness and mystery. Then a sound as of a trumpet was heard, summoning the people to meet with God. From the thick darkness flashed lightnings, while peals of thunder echoed among the surrounding heights. And Mount Sinai was altogether on a smoke, because the Lord descended upon it in fire, and the whole mount quaked greatly. The hosts of Israel shook with fear and fell upon their faces before the Lord. Even Moses exclaimed, "I exceedingly fear and quake." Now the thunders ceased, the trumpet was no longer heard, the earth was still. There was a period of solemn silence, then the voice of God was heard, speaking out of the thick darkness as He stood upon the mount, surrounded by angels. The Lord made known His law. "I am the Lord thy God, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. He who had brought them forth from Egypt, making a way for them through the sea, and overthrowing Pharaoh and his hosts, He it was who now spoke His law." God honored the Hebrews by making them the guardians and keepers of His law, but it was to be held as a sacred trust for the whole world. The precepts of the Decalogue are adapted to all mankind, and they were given for the instruction and government of all. 10 precepts, brief, comprehensive, and authoritative, cover the duty of man to God and to his fellow men, and all based upon the great fundamental principle of love. "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy strength, and with all thy mind, and thy neighbor as thyself." In the 10 commandments these principles are made applicable to man. 1. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Whatever we cherish that tends to lessen our love for God or to interfere with the service due Him, of that do we make a god. 2. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image, or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. Conceptions of God affect human behavior. Many heathen nations claim that their images were mere symbols by which the deity was worshipped, but God has declared such worship to be sin. The attempt to represent the Eternal One by material objects would lower man's conception of God. The mind would be attracted to the creature rather than to the Creator. As his conceptions of God were lowered, so would man become degraded. I the Lord thy God am a jealous God. The close relation of God to his people is represented under the figure of marriage. idolatry being spiritual adultery, the displeasure of God against it is fitly called jealousy. Visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me. Children are not punished for parents' guilt, except as they participate in their sins. It is usually the case, however, that by inheritance and example the sons become partakers of the father's sin. Wrong tendencies, perverted appetites, and debased morals, as well as physical disease and degeneracy, are transmitted as a legacy from father to son, to the third and fourth generation. Showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me, and keep my commandments. To those who are faithful in his service, mercy is promised, not merely to the third and fourth generation as is the wrath threatened against those who hate him, but to thousands of generations. 3. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless that taketh his name in vain. This commandment forbids us to use the name of God in a light or careless manner. By the thoughtless mention of God in common conversation, and by frequent, thoughtless repetition of his name, we dishonor him. Holy and reverend is his name. It should be uttered with reverence and solemnity. 4. Remember the Sabbath day, to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor, and do all thy work. But the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God, in it thou shalt not do any work, thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is within thy gates, for in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day, wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day, and hallowed it. The Sabbath is not introduced as a new institution but as having been founded at creation. Pointing to God as the maker of the heavens and the earth, it distinguishes the true God from false gods. Thus the Sabbath is the sign of man's allegiance to God. The fourth commandment is the only one of the ten in which are found both the name and the title of the lawgiver, the only one that shows by whose authority the law is given. Thus it contains the seal of God. God has given men 6 days wherein to labor, and he requires that their own work be done in the 6 working days. Acts of necessity and mercy are permitted on the Sabbath. The sick and suffering are at all times to be cared for, but unnecessary labor is to be strictly avoided. To keep the Sabbath holy, we should not even allow our minds to dwell upon things of a worldly character. And the commandment includes all within our gates. The inmates of the house are to lay aside their worldly business during the sacred hours. All should unite to honor God by willing service upon his holy day. 5. Honor thy father and thy mother that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Parents are entitled to a degree of love and respect due to no other person. He who rejects the rightful authority of his parents is rejecting the authority of God. The fifth commandment requires children not only to yield respect, submission, and obedience to their parents, but also to give them love and tenderness, to lighten their cares, to guard their reputation, and to succor and comfort them in old age. It also enjoins respect for ministers and rulers. 6. Thou shalt not kill. All acts of injustice that tend to shorten life, the spirit of hatred and revenge, or the indulgence of any passion that leads to injurious acts toward others, even to wish them harm, for whoso hateth his brother is a murderer, a selfish neglect of caring for the needy, self-indulgence or excessive labor that tends to injure health, all these are, to a greater or less degree, violations of the sixth commandment. 7. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Purity is demanded not only in the outward life but in the secret intents and emotions of the heart. Christ, who taught the far-reaching obligation of the law of God, declared the evil thought or look to be as truly sin as is the unlawful deed. 8. Thou shalt not steal. This prohibition condemns man's telling and slave dealing, wars of conquest, theft and robbery. It demands strict integrity in the minutest details of life. It forbids overreaching in trade and requires the payment of just debts or wages. Every attempt to advantage oneself by the ignorance, weakness, or misfortune of another is registered as fraud in the books of heaven. 9. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. An intention to deceive is what constitutes falsehood. By a glance of the eye, a motion of the hand, an expression of the countenance, a falsehood may be told as effectually as by words. Even the statement of facts in such a manner as to mislead is falsehood. Every effort to injure our neighbor's reputation by misrepresentation, slander or talebearing, the intentional suppression of truth by which injury may result to others, is a violation of the ninth commandment. 10. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. The tenth commandment strikes at the very root of all sins, prohibiting the selfish desire, from which springs the sinful act. He who refrains from indulging even a sinful desire for that which belongs to another will not be guilty of an act of wrong toward his fellow creatures. God proclaimed his law with exhibitions of his power and glory, that his people might never forget the scene. He would show to all men the sacredness and permanence of his law. God's law is a law of love. As God's great rule of right was presented before them, the people realized as never before the offensive character of sin and their own guilt in the sight of a holy God. The multitude cried out to Moses, "Speak thou with us, and we will hear, but let not God speak with us, lest we die." The leader answered, "Fear not, for God is come to prove you, and that his fear may be before your faces, that ye sin not." Blinded and debased by slavery and heathenism, the people were not prepared to appreciate fully the far-reaching principles of God's ten precepts. Additional precepts were given, illustrating and applying the principles of the Ten Commandments. These laws were called judgments because the magistrates were to give judgment according to them. Unlike the Ten Commandments, they were delivered privately to Moses. The first of these related to servants. A Hebrew could not be sold as a slave for life. His service was limited to 6 years. On the seventh he was to be set at liberty. The holding of slaves not of Israelitish birth was permitted, but their life and person were strictly guarded. The murderer of a slave was to be punished, an injury inflicted upon one by his master, though no more than the loss of a tooth, entitled him to his freedom. The Israelites were to beware of indulging the spirit of cruelty from which they had suffered under their Egyptian taskmasters. The memory of their own bitter servitude should enable them to put themselves in the servant's place, to be kind and compassionate. The rights of widows and orphans were specially guarded. "If thou afflict them in any wise," the Lord declared, "and they cry at all unto me, I will surely hear their cry, and my wrath shall wax hot, and I will kill you with the sword, and your wives shall be widows, and your children fatherless." Aliens who united themselves with Israel were to be protected from wrong or oppression. "Thou shalt not oppress a stranger, for ye know the heart of a stranger, seeing ye were strangers in the land of Egypt." The taking of usury from the poor was forbidden. A poor man's raiment or blanket taken as a pledge must be restored to him at nightfall. Judges were warned against perverting judgment, aiding a false cause, or receiving bribes. Slander was prohibited, and acts of kindness enjoined even toward personal enemies. The people were reminded of the sacred obligation of the Sabbath. Yearly feasts were appointed, at which all the men of the nation were to assemble before the Lord, bringing to him their offerings of gratitude and the first fruits of his bounties. The object of all these regulations was stated: all were given for the good of Israel. The Lord said, "Ye shall be holy men unto me." These laws were to be recorded by Moses and carefully, treasured as the foundation of the national law, and, with the Ten Precepts, the condition of the fulfillment of God's promises to Israel. The message was now given: "Behold, I send an angel before thee, to keep thee in the way, and to bring thee into the place which I have prepared. Beware of him, and obey his voice, provoke him not." Christ in the pillar of cloud and of fire was their leader. While there were types pointing to a Savior to come, there was also a present Savior, who gave commands to Moses for the people and was set forth before them as the only channel of blessing. How the Old Covenant was made. Upon descending from the mountain, Moses came and told the people all the words of the Lord, and all the judgments, and all the people answered with one voice, and said, "All the words which the Lord hath said will we do." Then followed the ratification of the covenant. An altar was built at the foot of the mountain, and beside it 12 pillars were set up, according to the 12 tribes of Israel, as a testimony of their acceptance of the covenant. Moses took the book of the covenant, and read in the audience of the people. All were at liberty to choose whether they would comply with the conditions of the covenant. They had heard God's law proclaimed, and its principles had been particularized, that they might know how much this covenant involved. Again the people answered with one accord, "All that the Lord hath said will we do, and be obedient." When Moses had spoken every precept to all the people according to the law, he took the blood, and sprinkled both the book, and all the people, saying, "This is the blood of the testament which God hath enjoined unto you." Moses had received the command, "Come up unto the Lord, thou, and Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel." The 70 elders were to assist Moses in the government of Israel, and God put upon them his spirit. And they saw the God of Israel, and there was under his feet as it were a paved work of a sapphire stone, and as it were the body of heaven in his clearness. They did not behold the deity, but they saw the glory of his presence. They had been contemplating his glory, purity, and mercy, until they could approach nearer to him. Moses and his minister Joshua were now summoned to meet with God. The leader appointed Aaron and Hur, assisted by the elders, to act in his stead. Moses waited for a summons to the presence chamber of the Most High. Though his patience and obedience were tested, he did not forsake his post. Even this favored servant of God could not at once approach into his presence and endure his glory. 6 days must be employed in devoting himself to God by searching of heart, meditation, and prayer. Upon the seventh day, which was the Sabbath, Moses was called up into the cloud. And Moses went into the midst of the cloud, and Moses was in the mount 40 days and 40 nights. He fasted during the entire 40 days. God exalts a race of slaves. During his stay in the mount, Moses received directions for the building of a sanctuary in which the divine presence would be specially manifested. "Let them make me a sanctuary, that I may dwell among them," was the command of God. For the third time the observance of the Sabbath was enjoined. "It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever," the Lord declared, "that ye may know that I am Jehovah that doth sanctify you. Ye shall keep the Sabbath therefore, for it is holy unto you. Whosoever doeth any work therein, that soul shall be cut off from among his people." Henceforth the people were to be honored with the abiding presence of their king. "I will dwell among the children of Israel, and will be their God, and the tabernacle shall be sanctified by my glory." From a race of slaves the Israelites had been exalted above all peoples to be the peculiar treasure of the King of Kings. God had separated them from the world, he had made them the depositaries of his law, and he purposed, through them, to preserve among men the knowledge of himself. Thus the light of heaven was to shine out to a world in darkness. A voice was to be heard appealing to all peoples to turn from idolatry to serve the living God. If the Israelites would be true to their trust, God would be their defense, and he would exalt them above all other nations.